You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Smith rifles that one to Mims. And that's a foot race he's going to win. Touchdown, Baylor. Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards. Five straight games, Anthony, where he's got a touchdown catch of over 20.
That's deflected and picked off Mosey. He'll take it in. It's a pick six and a touchdown.
Fell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder. 85 yards.
There was contact with a quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know, and it's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1, and we're taking a look at all of the draft picks that the Jets made in the 2020 NFL Draft. And one name that was a bit of a surprise to Jets fans, only because of the position he plays, was Cal safety Ashton Davis. Now, we had talked about him on the podcast a couple of times. You heard Luke Grant mention him, and obviously Coach Nigel Burton, who was on the show, talked about him when he was talking about all the prospects in the Pac-12. But Ashton Davis comes off the board at 68. A lot of people had him going somewhere between 40 and 50, so seems like really good value here. And I wanted to get a little bit more of a sense of what he's like as a person and kind of look under the hood, as we like to do on the show. So I went out and got one of the best. He covers Cal Sports right now for the Cal Sports Report, but he spent 27 years covering Cal Sports for the San Francisco Chronicle, Mr. Jake Curtis. Jake, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Oh, pleased to be here. Thanks.
So let's start with the fact that he was a double walk-on. This is something that you don't expect out of a third-round pick. But not only did he excel at track, he also excelled at football, neither of which he had a scholarship for, although he turned down the opportunity for a scholarship, right?
That's right, yeah. He coming out of high school, he was originally going to go to Redlands University. And then he took a visit to Cal primarily for track. And he liked it so much, he decided he wanted to play football and track at Cal, and he was offered a track scholarship at Cal, but only under the condition that he would not play football, and he didn't want to go for that. So he decided to walk on both sports, which caused his parents to take out a loan to finance him for a little while.
I think he's going to be paying them back and then some now with the money he's going to get from the NFL, but those are good parents that were very supportive of him. And they believed in their son, and they should have, because, boy, he had a heck of a career in track and football. Tell me a little bit about the dual threat.
Yeah, he was a star in track right away. He won the Pac-12 110 hurdles in 2017. And he walked. He talked to a lot of people. He had to email all kinds of officials and stuff to try to talk his way onto the football team. And finally, he found a guy who went to his high school who was associated with the Cal Athletic Department, who talked to the coach at the time, who was Sonny Dykes at the time. And when he came on first, he was a wide receiver on the scout team in his first year. And then he switched over to cornerback his next year, and then ultimately found his best spot at safety year after that.
Seems like he's a bit of a jack of all trades, right, Jake? Because he can play a little slot, he can play some safety, maybe line up at linebacker a little bit. And I think his athletic versatility allows him to do that, right?
Yeah, that's right. He can play. Like I said, he played cornerback and safety, and on times he did play that sort of hybrid strong safety linebacker spot, and he did that well as well. Yeah, he can do a lot of things, and I think that's what appealed to the Jets. I mean, the one question about him was his health, and nobody knew exactly how fast he was because he wasn't able to clock any times at the combine or at the Cal Pro Day.
Tell me a little bit about that. What's the injury situation with him?
I don't know for sure, but the medical reports are that he's fine. He had a relatively minor surgery right after the regular season for a groin problem he had throughout the last couple of games of the season. He missed the Stanford game, which was the second last game. He played in the UCLA game, which was the last game, but didn't play that entire game, and then didn't play in the Red Box Bowl at all, and went to the Senior Bowl and did interviews and stuff like that, but didn't play in the game again because of the recovering from the surgery. And then at the combine, he did interviews and Wunderlich and did the bench presses, but did not do any of the timing for the agility drills or the 40 because he still wanted to recover. And then he was going to do it all at Cal Pro Day, which is March 20th. And then that got canceled because of the COVID-19 pandemic. He is fast. I mean, the 110 meter hurdle champion in the Pac-12, that indicates he's pretty quick. And I think he was the fastest guy on the Cal team.
Tell me more about his speed, because we can read numbers, we can look at achievements, yeah, but you saw it up close. Just how fast is this guy?
Yeah, he has real good catch-up speed. At least on the football field, it looks really good, because on the occasion when he might have made a bad read, he was able to catch up and knock down some passes. He claims he probably could have, even without much training, could probably run a 4.4. And if he had had some training, regular training, he probably would have. What did he say? He said something like something special for a safety. He said he could have run a 40. But I don't know. I mean, you know, he was plenty fast on the football field, certainly.
And he has kick return abilities too, right? Didn't he return a kick for a touchdown at one point?
He's a very good kick returner. They stopped doing it later on, partly because of his injuries and partly because they didn't want to get him injured a lot. Mm-hmm. And he made a lot of use out of hurdling in his kickoff returns. A lot of times he would hurdle tackles on his kickoff returns. And yeah, actually that was probably his best skill, was kickoff returns. And I assume that's why one of the reasons that the Jets took him, because I would assume they might want to put him back there if he's not going to be in the starting lineup. And it's hard to believe he's going to be a starter with the safeties they have unless they want to move somebody around or move him out of off the team for some reason.
It's probably the ghost of the memory of Jason Sehorn if they don't put him back there. You recall Jason Sehorn, who was a really good player out on the West Coast in college, and he ended up on the Giants, right, a really good corner and kick returner, but then he ended up getting an injury as a kick returner that more or less ruined his career. And ever since then, a lot of teams have been worried about putting starting players in that position. But I want to ask you about his ability as a safety, because we know he's a jack of all trades, but Marcus May's contract is coming up at the end of the season. He's going to be 28 years old. The Jets are looking to pay Jamal Adams in the offseason. It's highly unlikely they're going to pay two safeties, so you figure that Marcus May probably moves on after 2020. Do you think that Ashton Davis could be that center fielder for the Jets next to Jamal Adams after Marcus May moves on?
Yeah, that makes sense. I wasn't aware of all his contract situation, but yeah, that does make some sense. Davis is much better as a free safety, reading the situation. That's what he does best. He might have trouble on a strong safety, some of the coverage that he have to do there. But as a free safety, I think it'd be great. He had six picks as a junior and two more as a senior, and he's a great top of the defense guy.
Tell me a little bit about Ashton Davis as a person. We know that he is somebody that is willing to fight for what he wants, because he had the opportunity to get a scholarship, but he really wanted to try football. And so he busted his butt at track, he busted his butt at football, and he made it happen for himself, achieving a lot in both. We know that he obviously comes from a family that believes in him because, like you said, his parents put him through school when he turned down that scholarship, which I got to be honest with you, a lot of parents would have been ready to strangle him for costing them that much money when he had a chance to get a free ride at school. But tell me a little bit more about Ashton Davis, the person.
Yeah, he's a very mature kid. He's a guy who acts like he's 35. He's well-spoken, thoughtful guy, great for the media. He always had an intelligent answer for what he was talking about, and he's just a really class guy in that terms as far as behavior and all that kind of stuff. I think he will impress the Jets coaches and the media with his personality.
Jake, the accomplishments speak for themselves. First team All-Pac-12 in 2018, second team All-Pac-12 in 2019. We look at the film, we see it, we hear what you're saying about him as a person, but his personality, you said it's going to be a good fit here, and I'm curious because here's a kid who grew up in Santa Cruz. He's been in California his entire life. Now he goes all the way across the country to New York. It's obviously very different culturally, and that doesn't mean better or worse. It just means different. Do you think that his personality will fit with the New York style culture?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. I think he's a really adaptable kid, and I don't think he'll have any problems with that. He's from Santa Cruz, which is, I don't know, what, 40 miles south of San Francisco. So I don't think he'll have any problem with that. I mean, I'm originally from the East Coast, and everybody talked about the great differences between the East Coast and the West Coast, and, you know, I think it's a little bit overblown. I don't think there's as much difference as people are led to believe.
That's probably true, except for the pizza, right?
Yeah. they have pizza here, too, but it's always has some kind of organic something or other on it.
I always tell people, no matter what, you can leave New York, and it's fine. There's a lot of great things that you can do in a ton of other places, and I think that you can live a really happy life in a lot of different spots, but the one thing that you will always miss if you're from New York and you leave is the pizza, right?
I guess so. Yeah. I'm partial to Chicago deep dish myself.
Oh, no. I like Chicago deep dish, but I just don't consider it pizza. It's pie with sauce and cheese in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. I hear you. Yeah.
I enjoy it, though. I have no problems with it. I was actually teasing Zach Pearson from the Bear Report about it, and he was saying that while he also likes it, and he's born and bred in Chicago, he thinks that New York-style pizza is more what people think of when they think of pizza. But this isn't a pizza podcast as much as I would love it to be. We're going to talk a little bit more about Ashton Davis before we let you go. Jake, I wanted to ask you this also. Do you think that he's somebody that can deal with tough personalities? Because you're looking at Adam Gase, who is the head coach, and I know that he's not going to have that much of a voice when it comes to the defense. He usually leaves that to Greg Williams. Everyone knows Greg Williams. He's loud. He's boisterous. He screams. He's a tough nut to crack. But if you please him, if you work hard, if you put results out there, he's going to love you. So he's a guy that if you disappoint him and you get in his doghouse, could be some big problems. If you can't deal with somebody screaming in your ear, maybe not the best coach for you. But if you bust your butt and if you're able to give him what he needs, he's going to love you. Do you think that he would be a good fit for Greg Williams?
We'll see. I mean, I was just trying to think. Wilcox is not a real shouting guy. He's a more matter-of-fact guy. And the DB coach, Gerald Alexander, who's now with the Dolphins, actually, is more of a upbeat guy, less of a browbeating kind of guy. So I think it'll be different for Davis. I think he's mature enough to handle it. I guess we'll see, but I think it will be something different for him.
It certainly will. New York, California, the Jets and the Cal Bears, very different, but I think we have learned a lot about Ashton Davis as a person, not just from what you're saying, but from his actions, because like we said, look at all he's overcome, look at the challenges he's faced, and he's won every single time. So now he's going to have a chance to try and do the same thing here in New York with the New York Jets. Jake Curtis, covering Cal football for the Cal Sports Report. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find you if they want to read your work, get a little deeper in on Ashton Davis and some of the other great stuff that you're covering in terms of Cal football, because Ashton Davis isn't the only guy that Jets fans want to look at. I'm sure there are plenty of players on Cal that they're going to want to take a look at for next year's draft.
Yeah, we're at Cal Sports Report. It's a part of the SI.com umbrella. So, we're under si.com/college/Cal.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
When you pick a punter at number 191 overall, he's going to start. That's just the way it works, and it's funny that way because when you use a sixth-round pick on almost any other position, you would say it's a dart throw. But when you're using it on a punter or a kicker, that's a guy that you're expecting to come in and start right away. And so that's what I think is going to happen with Braden Mann, the punter from Texas A&M. And so I wanted to learn a little bit more about him. Went out and got one of the best. He's a reporter for MyAggieNation.com, Mr. Travis Brown. Travis, thanks so much for coming on, man.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about Braden Mann. And the thing that stuck out to me was, and I know that you had told me this before we started recording, he really wanted to be a linebacker, but he just wasn't big enough. So he ended up becoming a punter and a kicker in high school and became really, really good to the point where when he went to college as a recruit, he was rated nationally as the number two kicker in the entire country by Rivals. So that's a guy that would be in demand. He ends up at Texas A&M and doesn't really do that much the first 2 years. He was the kickoff specialist, right, at first?
Right. He was behind Daniel LaCamera, who was a pretty consistent punter for the Aggies for several seasons, and then Shane Trapuka, who was a guy who got some action in some NFL camps after college, and then ended up punting in the XFL this past season. So there was definitely some next level talent ahead of him. That's something that they've done here at A&M a little bit in letting the kind of backup guy, whether it be a punter or a kicker, take over the kickoff duties if he can prove to have it, just to kind of get some game experience, some game reps, not go in there cold when it's his time to be the guy. And so Braden Mann definitely got some opportunities like that leading into his junior year. But when he got into his junior year, man, he made an impression quick, that is for sure.
Broke some NCAA records, right?
Yeah, his punting average his junior year in 2018 was 51 yards, which is the NCAA single season record. Also holds the NCAA record for most 60-yard punts in a season, which I believe is 14. Just absolutely electric. And to the point where sometimes his kicks, the only knock on him were sometimes his kicks were so long that he was either constantly kicking touchbacks, or he was out kicking his coverage at times because they were just going so far. And so if you actually look at his stats between his junior year and his senior year, he dropped to 47.1 on his kick average, because he was actually working more on the situational kicking, working on helping out his coverage team a little bit more and placing his accuracy of his kicks a little bit more his senior year. And so, yeah, he didn't quite have the same average. He still finished number four in the nation in punt average, but wasn't a return Ray Guy Award winner, because he was working on some stuff a little bit more, kind of honing his game and focusing in. I mean, he talked about it from day one, how much he was focusing on his situational punting and his accuracy in his punting a little bit less than just the power that he's had, because he already demonstrated that wholly his junior year.
So would you say that the progress was very noticeable from junior to senior year in terms of refining the finer points of being a punter? Because we know he's got a leg. He showed that in spades. But like you said, that senior year, he was trying very hard to work on the fundamentals. You would say that his progress was easy to see?
I would say it this way. In some aspects, to a average football watcher, a punter is kind of like a lot of like an offensive lineman, and unless you're booting 60-yard punts or you're messing up, It's just the punter that's out there. And so I think as we talked to him and as we kind of focused in a little bit more on what he was doing and how the ball was coming off his foot a little bit more, you could tell that he was playing with the spins and playing with the way that the ball came off his foot his senior year. But I think the real indicator is the fact that while his numbers dropped between his junior and senior year, just a little bit, not anything crazy, he didn't feel like it dropped off. I mean, Jimbo Fisher always talked about him as a weapon. I mean, you think of a punter as, oh, the offense just stalled out. You know, this is a bad time for the team right now. But they actually knew that if they sent Braden Mann out, they were engaging a field position battle that more times than not they would win because they were pinning the team back very far into their territory. And so you really didn't sense any drop off. If you didn't see any numbers and you watched both seasons, that he didn't come close to breaking the 60-yard punt record, but he nothing seemed to have fallen off between his junior and senior year. And I think that is a credit to him because there was really nowhere to go but down from that junior year, breaking NCAA records, winning the Ray Guy Award, breaking so many school records. He managed to maintain consistency.
Travis, we mentioned before that he wanted to be a linebacker but just didn't have the size. But he seems to not have lost that desire to be physical on the football field. You were telling me some funny stories about the way that he plays the punter position before we started recording. Why don't you share a little bit of that?
Sure. He told us often laughing that he had always dreamed about being a college linebacker growing up. That's what he wanted to do and play. And he comes in now at 5'11", 195, and that's probably soaking wet. He's not the biggest dude. So I think he knew pretty well on that college linebacker was not going to be in his cards. Also, he suffered some back injuries playing younger football, and it probably wasn't going to be the smartest thing for him to continue re-injuring that back with the grind of kind of being an outfield player per se, or non-specialist. But he kind of found his niche in punting and early on in kicking because that was a way he could be able to stay in the game and stay healthy. And so he still takes that mentality of wanting to be a linebacker when he goes on to kickoffs and punts, because he, in his career at A&M, recorded 13 tackles, including 7 last season. Most of those were touchdown saving tackles on kickoffs and punt returns. And he even forced a fumble his junior year that was recovered by A&M. He's a guy that he's not going to, when it's him and the returner, and that's all that's left coming into the end zone, he's not going to just throw his shoulder kind of at the returner's feet and hope that the returner trips over him. And he is going to wrap up, form tackle, get the guy to the ground and deliver a blow that's hard enough that can knock a ball loose like he did his junior year. So he always got a lot of praise, and we always joked around with him a lot every time he would come out of a game with another tackle. And he always seemed to almost always have a bigger smile on his face after he was able to make one of those big tackles and really kind of lay some pain than he was necessarily booting a huge 60-yard punt. That was always a more fun interview talking about those tackles with him, because he really enjoyed doing that.
How was he on kickoffs? Theoretically, let's say the Jets were to get a kicker who's not known for necessarily having a big leg. Maybe he's more accurate, but he's not someone that's going to hit from 50, 60 yards. Do you think that he could handle kickoff duties as well, if asked?
Oh, sure. I mean, there was A&M's had a great special teams unit the past couple of years as far as returns go, and that's mostly because most of his kickoffs were in the end zone. I mean, they didn't face that many returns at all while he was the kickoff specialist. So it was really pretty ho-hum in that regard, because most of his kicks are going out of the end zone. So if you want a guy who's going to step in and minimize the amount of hits and contact that your kickoff team is going to have to face and minimize the other team's returner, I mean, he's going to boot it into the end zone, and that's kind of been his MO. So they didn't really honestly do a whole ton of situational kickoff kicking with him as far as maybe dropping it on the end zone and trying to force a return because they were just wanted to. Jimbo Fisher has always talked about how he likes a kicker that's just going to kick it out of the back of the end zone and save the amount of contact that his specialists and special teams players have to take, because it's a grind of a season and a grind of a game. So yeah, if they need a guy who's just going to step up there and boot it out of the end zone and try to minimize returns, he can definitely do that.
Travis, you and I were talking about this before we started recording, but Braden Mann was a captain. He was one of five captains that the Jets selected on day number three. And I found it fascinating because you don't typically see a punter as a captain on a team. I think that says a lot about his personality. What was he like to be around and to cover?
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy, really squared away. I think it says a lot about who he is as a person that, his physical attributes proved themselves on the field with his records he broke and winning the Ray Guy Award. And I think that played a lot into his respect from his teammates and getting voted a captain. But I think it also says something about his demeanor in the locker room and kind of taking that linebacker's demeanor and that linebacker's leadership qualities into the locker room and being a guy who can lead even though he's a punter. I mean, everybody in that locker room absolutely respected the heck out of him because of what he was able to do and the kind of weapon he was. I mean, we talked about this earlier, what Jimbo Fisher said, when someone describes a football player as a weapon, you think quarterback, wide receiver, running back, maybe tight end, and those are your weapons. But everyone on the team considered him a weapon. And then he was the guy also that they ran out to the media after wins, after losses. He was able to coherently break down and talk about all the different aspects of the game, not just the punting game, because he is involved and talking with people and in those conversations and did it very eloquently and did it very professionally. And I certainly it comes as no surprise that they, after talking with him and kind of getting to know him as a person, very laid back, would joke around with us and was very comfortable talking with us and just seemed very mature for his age. And I think that every right to be a captain, even though he was a specialist and a punter.
Travis, he's from Cypress, Texas, and he spent the last couple of years at Texas A&M. Now he's coming to New York, a huge culture shift, obviously. How do you think he'll do here?
I think he'll do fine. He's very mature beyond his age. I think he's a squared away kid. He can get adjusted. I don't see him as being a huge, going to go out and live up the New York party life or anything like that. I think he's probably going to be pretty professional, get the job done and do what he needs to do. So yeah, I'm sure there's a huge culture shift in having grown up. Probably Cypress is 45 minutes away from Bryan College Station. So just basically kind of coming down the road to go to college after growing up there, but he's had to travel around the country, playing teams for football and travel around the country for award circuits and training. And so, as you know, and as everyone knows, these football players now and any of these college athletes have had to, especially the ones that are performing at the highest level, have had to travel the country and live out of a hotel and have the certain amounts of discipline they need to do to be away from home and also get the job done and be professional. And I think he really epitomized that. So yeah, I don't see a whole lot of worries being away from where, what he's accustomed to get the job done for sure.
You watched him in every game that he played. You got to know him very well on a personal level. What's your ultimate prediction here? Do you think he's going to come in and become the type of punter that can be here for 10 to 15 years, maybe be a multiple-time Pro Bowler? Because that's what you're expecting when you use a draft pick on a kid like this. You think he can live up to that?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why he couldn't. The times where he really only shanked about two punts in his 2 years that I can remember, and really they weren't horrible shanks. They were just not 40 plus yarders, and he handled all those situations really well. And if he, the few times that he did that early in his career, if he shanked one, he came back and booted one 50 yards the next time. And so I think I fully buy into, I know Mel Kiper on the draft coverage said that he envisions this guy being a multiple year Pro Bowler and a long career, and mentioned Shane Leckler a lot. I mean, A&M has a pretty rich recent history of putting punters in the NFL between Shane Leckler and Drew Kaser. And Shane Trebuka got a little quick shot. And now, Braden Mann. And, I see no reason why he couldn't follow the Shane Leckler, path of being a veteran and being a guy who has a really long career in the NFL and does some really impressive stuff while he's up there. And like we said, is just a leader and a savvy professional from, pretty early on in his career.
Travis Brown of MyAggieNation.com. Great job giving us some insight on the Jets' new punter, Braden Mann. Also, thanks again to Jay Curtis of the Cal Sports Report for coming on and giving us some insight on Ashton Davis, who should be a key contributor in 2020 and perhaps even a full-time starter in 2021. If you haven't had a chance to give us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. It's an easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. It doesn't take much time. It doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could do that for us, we would be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.